So today we are having an initiation ceremony for Nadia. And we are situated here in a very nice home of Radharaja and Sita. We're letting us have the ceremony here. There'll be no fire here because there'll be a fire. You can have the fire sacrifice at the temple because it would be a little dangerous to have a fire here. Anyway, and a little complicated. So in any case, we want to concentrate on the meaning of initiation and the meaning of the holy name, which is the most important thing. So, first of all, Prabhupada would often say that initiation means to begin. Like when you initiate something, like you initiate a business, or you initiate a process, it begins the process. It's not the end of the process. It's not that one achieves perfection by taking initiation. There used to be, and there still is, to a certain extent, another type of initiation, which is called the Siddha Deha initiation that was given many, many years ago to people who were very advanced, that is, almost pure devotees in Krishna consciousness, in which at the time of initiation, it's called Siddha Pranali, that the disciple would get their spiritual name and form in the spiritual world. Did you ever hear that before? Mm-hmm. Siddha Pranali. Of course, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his divine grace Srila Prabhupada, they prohibited this particular type of initiation because people aren't really qualified in this Kali Yuga. At least 99.99% of the people aren't qualified. So Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur stress very much worshipping Krishna in the mood of awe and reverence. And Srila Prabhupada's famous saying, of course, is deserve and then desire. In other words, first we have to show Krishna how much we love him, and then Krishna will show himself to us. Or Srila Prabhupada said, don't try to see Krishna, have Krishna try to see you, right? So this is Prabhupada's mood and the mood of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That before we can jump up, well, we shouldn't jump up, but before we can actually understand the intimate loving exchanges of Radha and Krishna, or even enter into these loving exchanges, we have to be qualified. And qualification is devotion, as mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, Gyanakarma Anavritam, Anukul Yena Krishnanda Shilanam, Bhakti Uttamam. You all know that verse now. That verse is a definition of pure devotional service. In other words, before we can actually understand who or what we are in the spiritual world, we have to fulfill these requirements given by Rupa Goswami, which means anyabi lashita shunyam, become devoid of all dirty things in the heart. And that means lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear, the wonderful things that we're attached to, you know. Fear, lust, greed, envy, illusion. So, it's actually about six of them. It's more than that, but six basic qualities or categories. So we have to become free of those things. That's called anartha nivritti. And so, anyabhilashita shunyam. And we even have to become free of desire for liberation from this world. That's a big motivation people have, isn't it? Mm. They want to get the hell out of here. You have that word, hell, in German? How do you say that in German? Hölle.
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 Hölle. Hölle. What is it?
Hölle.
Hölle. Hölle.
Hölle.
Hölle. Hölle. Hölle. All right. Learning a little German. So we want to get the hell out of here. So that's called jnana. Jnana means like knowledge, but the basic reason people acquire knowledge is to get out of this world. And then jnana, karma, and avritam. So we have to lose desire for any enjoyment in this world. We have to become free from any. That's a negative definition. But all these are negative definitions. You know, free from this, know this, not, none of that. You understand? Mm. And then there's a positive definition is anyabhi lashita jnana karma avritam Krishna anu shilanam bhakti rutamam, that one has to desire to please Krishna. But actually, there's three qualities, positive qualities. One has to serve Krishna actively. One has to do what Krishna wants, and one has to do with a mood of devotion. In other words, you can't just sit back and dream about serving Krishna in the future. And you can't just serve Krishna with a bad attitude. You know, I have to do this. I have to chant my rounds. You. Before I can eat prasadam. Or I have to preach. You know, someone just wrote me a letter. They said, I can't relate to you because you're saying you have to go out and help people understand, you know, spread Krishna consciousness. I can't relate. I just want to be with the gopis. I just got a letter from someone. They were very attracted to one of the Babaji's in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, there's these Babaji's. Babaji in Radhakund or Vrindavan, they're the people who dress very simply. It's a bona fide thing. And they just engage in chanting all day long. They follow the process of Bhajananandi. There's two processes, Goshtananandi and Bhajananandi. Goshtananandi is one who goes out and tries to get other people to take up Krishna consciousness. And Bhajananandi is someone who chants, and he may be a great pure devotee, like that. Of the two, Goshtananandi is higher because just even in this material world, if you see someone suffering, let's say you're eating food, and you're enjoying your dinner, right? And then someone out in the street gets hit by a car. So, what about the person who just goes on enjoying their dinner?
Selfish.
Well, I don't want to call anyone names, but it's not as high as going out and trying to help the person who's gotten hit by the car, right? And you hear a screech on the road, and you're sitting down eating your pizza or whatever you're eating, and you just, let me finish dinner first, and then we'll see what's happening. So that's almost like Bhajananandi. Because there's people suffering in the world. Why are they suffering? For lack of Krishna consciousness, and many other reasons too. But it's all basically lack of Krishna consciousness. And people are causing other people's suffering because of their lack of Krishna consciousness. Like we read in the newspaper about, you know, even human slaves that are there nowadays. And the reason for that is that people don't have the compassion or empathy or terrorists who are doing different things. So it's a lack of Krishna consciousness that really causes people to cause others to suffer and also causes people to suffer. Isn't it? You think about it. So anyway, so let's get back to the point. So there was this one person who wrote me a letter that basically I'm really attracted, not attracted to going and helping people, but I'm attracted to chanting. I said, that's fine, you're attracted to chanting. Happy about that. You know, at least you're attracted to chanting. But generally, people are just prematurely taking up the process of just chanting. And even Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he wanted to prematurely take up the process of just chanting. And the reason was that he wanted to get away from the fight, where he had to fight with his family members and do so many unpleasant things, right? So following Prabhupada's example, we are interested in helping others. The compassion, just like we're doing this school in Govardhan, or trying to do the school, which Radharaja will be heading up very soon. So we're doing this school. See, what's spoken has to become true. So anyway, so we're doing the school in Govardhan. We're working with Food for Life, just because we feel this impetus to help others. And this is Vaishnava. The Vaishnava is actually, the compassion is one of the primary qualities of a Vaishnava. Of course, the primary quality is, you know, just simply wants to please Krishna. But Krishna is an anxiety. See, people say, I just want to please Krishna and go to the spiritual world and everything like that. But if you talk to Krishna, he's an anxiety over everyone here. I mean, that's it. And Radharani is also. There's that story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Radharani calls this Gopakumar over to see her. And his name there is Sarupa. And she says to him, he's a coward boy, but he's this Radharani of Krishna. She says to him, go to the material world and save this guy. You know, I have one devotee there who's worshiping me as Durga, really, because this Brahmin, Mathura, was a Mathura Brahmin, was worshiping Radharani as Radharani's expansion in this material world, who was Durga. And she was so compassionate. Yeah. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. And she said, he's my devotee, go save him. So Gopakumar, who is Sarupa, his spiritual name, he flew or appeared in the material world and preached to this Brahmin. So Radharani was an anxiety over someone. So Krishna is an anxiety over everyone in this world.
It's really interesting that he worshipped Durga.
Yeah, he was worshipping Durga, an expansion of Radharani. But Radharani considered this person her devotee. You know, read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that talks about that. Anyway, so this compassion is a necessary quality. And we see that in His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who all of us are followers of, that's why I'm stressing that we should remain faithful to Prabhupada's line, because that's Prabhupada's mood. And Prabhupada's mood is actually compassion. I mean, the primary qualities I mentioned before of a Vaishnava, an advanced Vaishnava, Goshtananandi Vaishnava, is he just overwhelmed with compassion. He can't keep himself from trying to help people, because he sees people that in this world, he sees people in their actual position that they are suffering. So it's just like it's like a force. Just like when we see people suffering, sometimes, isn't it? You're forced to try to help them. So in the same way, a Vaishnava is forced by this impulse, which is part of his love for Krishna, to help people in the material world. Mm. Anyway, so this is Prabhupada's mood. So we are, all of us in this ISKCON movement, and I'm not talking about other movements or other societies, but you're taking initiation within ISKCON as a follower of Prabhupada, and I'm Prabhupada's representative. I mean, you're also my disciple, but at the same time, I would say our most important siksha relationship is with His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Everyone, in one sense, is Prabhupada's disciple. In the siksha sense, you know, taking shelter in Srila Prabhupada. So we should remember that, because that way we'll be able to channel, and I'm not using this in a psychic sense, but we'll be able to channel Prabhupada's compassion for others. This is our primary duty. This, actually, you see in Prabhupada's pastimes, this is what he was pleased with most. When people were compassionate, distributing books, preaching, bringing people to Krishna consciousness, much more so than buildings or external things. I was with Srila Prabhupada in his room one time, and devotees were showing Srila Prabhupada pictures of a new temple that had just been constructed or renovated. And Prabhupada... You coming back? All right. So Prabhupada was looking at these pictures. The English word is nonchalantly. I don't know if you know that word. Nonchalantly means, yeah, all right, very nice. Nice couple, nice pictures. But then one devotee came up. Well, actually, I talked about the devotee to Prabhupada. I said, this devotee distributed so many of your books and did so much preaching. And Prabhupada's eyes opened wide like this, like little saucers. And Prabhupada said, he has the mercy of Krishna. And the rest of us, feeling envious of this person, because he had gotten Prabhupada's attention, and the rest of us, you know, Prabhupada wasn't even looking at the rest of us. Prabhupada understood that we were envious. And Prabhupada looked around and said, you all have the mercy of Krishna. But it's just like the gopis, they're higher. So Prabhupada had the final word, you know. So, and Prabhupada also said that sharing Krishna consciousness is in the mood of the gopis. So if one really wants to understand the highest aspects of Krishna's rasas, then it's in this Kali Yuga, it's absolutely necessary to share Krishna consciousness with others, to be compassionate. Absolutely necessary, because in this Kali Yuga, we worship Krishna by approaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. Because without approaching Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're not performing the Dharma of this age, which is Krishna Nam Sankirtan, right? Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nam Sankirtan. So anyway, so just a little background for initiation. So at the time of initiation, Srila Prabhupada would generally talk about the 10 offenses on chanting. You've heard the about the 10 offenses of chanting before. So these 10 offenses, they're like a negative injunctions. You know, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. You know, like don't commit offenses against devotees, etc. So I'd like to express these 10 injunctions in a positive framework, because I usually like to express things positively. Okay, so the first offense, and in other words, we have to guard against these offenses not only while we're chanting japa, but when we're not chanting japa. It's not that, let's say, the offense of committing offenses or offending Vaishnavas or people dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. You just follow that while you're chanting japa. You don't offend any devotee while you're chanting, but you're supposed to follow that whatever you're doing, any time of the day. Okay, so let's take the first offense. Let's express it in a positive way. First offense, of course, is blasphemy of the devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name or the glories of the Lord. So let's say, taking a positive way, we should glorify those devotees. That's a positive thing. Instead of just, don't do this, we're saying, glorify the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating Krishna consciousness. So that's extremely important to do that. So anyway, so that's the first offense. And the second offense is to think that the names of the demigods, that's a negative expression, so think of the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, etc., are equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Instead, we understand Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arasapta Vritya, that Krishna is the supreme controller. He's the source of all the demigods. And so we don't blaspheme or criticize any of these demigods. You know what demigods are. They're people who work for Krishna. They're his employees. Just like Radharaja has a business, and he has employees. They work for him. So he's the supreme. And that's why his name is on his company. And everybody else has to wear a t-shirt with his name on it. So they may be controllers, little Ishwaras, but he's the Paramishwara in his business. So anyway, so that's the second offense.
That's my problem.
Third offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. So the obvious positive is to obey the order of the spiritual master, but not blindly. To understand the mood of the spiritual master. And just like it's described about Rupa Goswami, he understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. Therefore, he was the one most capable of being the original preceptor after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then we have this prayer to Rupa Goswami. Sri Rupa Goswami. Mano Bishtam. That Rupa Goswami understood the internal mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do you know this prayer? That therefore he is pretty much the head of this branch of the Sampradaya after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we are called Rupanugas. So anyway, so that's the next, and so the next offense after that is to blaspheme Vedic literatures or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. And obviously the positive of that is to glorify the Vedic literatures. The Vedic literatures are meant for understanding Krishna, even though some of them are dealing with phenomenal or material things, they're ultimately meant to bring us to Krishna, because people are at different stages. So just like you have stairs, and there's different steps in stairs, and the lower step is not less important than the upper step, right? Because you have to go step by step. Anyway, so we cover that. And so the next one is to think that the glories of chanting Hare Krishna are imagination. And the positive is that we understand that Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Krishna is personally there in his holy names. It's not imagination. Next offense is to give some interpretation, mundane interpretation or speculative interpretation on the holy names. Like people will say, did you chant Hare Krishna and it causes you to, what's it called, alpha waves or something like that. Alpha or beta waves to function better. That's why you're experiencing happiness when you chant So instead, we understand, we give the real interpretation or the real understanding of the holy name that when we're chanting, we're crying out for Radharani to help us serve Krishna. I like Hare is Radharani in the vocative form. That means calling out. And Krishna, of course, is Krishna. And interesting, there's different interpretations of the word, bona fide interpretations of the word Rama. Rama can mean Lord Ramchandra, who is the husband of Sita. It can mean Balaram. You know what else it can mean?
Radharani.
No, it doesn't mean Radharani. It means Krishna who enjoys Radharani. Oh. Like Radha Ramana Hari, Govinda Jaya Jaya. Yeah. So that the Acharyas give that understanding or interpretation of the word Rama too. Krishna who's the enjoyer, supreme enjoyer. So, let's see. And then the next offense is to consider the name like a ritual. In the Vedic literatures, and also in every religion, they have all different rituals. Like in Christianity, there's what genuflection. You know what genuflection is? No. Or they have bowing down. And we have our different rituals, too, that we do. You know, we bow down, go home, like this. And then we, what else do we do? It's a ritual. You know, the RT ceremonies and everything like that. And these rituals are meant to bring us closer to Krishna. I'm not saying we should not follow them. However, we should understand that rituals can be accepted or rejected insofar as they help us remember Krishna. Because the first rule in devotional service is always remember Krishna. The second rule is what? Never forget Krishna. So the rituals can be adjusted according to time, place, and circumstance for the ultimate goal of remembering Krishna. That's really important. But the chanting Hare Krishna is not adjusted. It's not that we say, well, chanting Hare Krishna really doesn't work right now. So let's chant the German national anthem instead. Well, whatever, yeah. Or, you know, George Harrison song or something like that. So that's, in other words, it's not adjustable. It's an eternal spiritual principle. Other things are rituals, like the Sika, the Sari, the Dodi. These are all rituals, external things. But chanting Hare Krishna is something that continues eternally. That's the difference between a ritual can be part of the sadhya, I mean the process. But it's, I'm sorry, sadhana. I got the words wrong. It can be part of the sadhana, but it can't be part of the sadhya. Sadhya means the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go back to Godhead, you're chanting Hare Krishna. But when you go back to Godhead, you may not be doing arti, or arti may take a different form, or you may not have a sika, or you may not have a sari. I mean, for example, in the spiritual world, the gopis don't wear saris, they wear like gopi skirts. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. And when Krishna is fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra, he doesn't wear dhoti, because he would be tripping all over himself, and it would be a disaster. You know, driving the chariot, wearing a dhoti, and the thing would be opening up in the wind, and Krishna like that. You know, it just doesn't compute. So, these things, don't confuse what I'm saying, don't confuse the rituals with the essence. The essence is chanting Hare Krishna, loving Krishna, Krishna's pastimes. These are all eternal things. Everything else, like harmonium, is part of the ritual. Because it's not even, you know, of course, I'm not going to describe what is Vedic, but it's not even traditional in Indian culture, the harmonium. It came from Europe. Some people say Germany, some people say other countries. Well, the Muslims brought it from Europe because it's a Western scale. Mm. It's a Western scale. In Germany. A lot of the things the Muslims have, or did, came from Europe. In fact, the civilization in Baghdad, which is one of the oldest Muslim civilizations before it was destroyed by the Mughals, you know, Genghis Khan and company, really saved Western culture to a large extent. Because during the Dark Ages, most of the books of the Greek literature was burned. So the Muslims saved them. So they, you know, they were extremely cultured in those days. Then what happened is the Mughals came down from the north, you know, the descendants of Genghis Khan. You've heard of Genghis Khan before?
Genghis Khan, yeah.
Genghis Khan. In English, you say Genghis Khan. They came down and they destroyed the sophisticated Muslim culture. And they turned it into something different. It was extremely sophisticated. They had indoor plumbing. They had waterways. They had beautiful fountains. It was extreme. We're talking about Iraq now, you know, Baghdad. It was actually the cultural center point of the whole Western world many, many years ago. But the Mughals destroyed it. So, anyways, we're getting a little away from the point. But in any case, we don't take the rituals or some of the external things as on the same level as chanting, because chanting is eternal. We'll always do that. In the spiritual world, they're chanting Hare Krishna. They may not be playing harmoniums. They may play veenas instead, or guitars, or who knows. But we're interested in eternal things, things that continue to exist. And temporary things can be utilized in the service of eternal things. I mean, in the spiritual world, they don't have iPads either. I mean, that may come as a disappointment to me.
But they have Kalpa Vriksha trees. You can get one.
I don't think you would ask a Kalpa Vriksha tree for an iPad in the spiritual world. That would be, I think you don't need it in the spiritual world.
Krishna, Goswami, Gopi, iPad, Veena.
You know, there's a lot of things that we use in Krishna's service, but don't confuse the paraphernalia with the goal. And you know, dhoti is paraphernalia, and all these things are paraphernalia. All right, so that's, and so the ninth offense is to preach the glories of the Lord to those who are faithless. And instead, let's think of it in a positive way. We should talk to those people in such a way that people will be able to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, you don't want to say something to someone whereby they'll just like become confused, bewildered, angry, blasphemous, or whatever. So you have to understand how to adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance. And that's the positive there. And the tenth offense is basically to not have complete faith in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and maintain material attachments. So the positive is to develop faith. How do we develop faith in the chanting? We associate with those who have faith. We hear from those who have faith. People ask sometimes, how do you develop faith in Krishna consciousness? There's different ways. One is we perform bhakti, and by experiencing the results, that increases, that feedback sort of increases our faith in Krishna consciousness. Another way is we see those who are performing bhakti, how they're advancing in devotional service. And another way is we see pure devotees, what their qualities are. You know, people who come from the spiritual world, like Srila Prabhupada. So it's basically by performance of bhakti yoga and by interaction with those who are performing bhakti yoga that we gain our faith. You can't gain faith just by saying, I've got to have faith, or you have to have faith. So, and then it's all mentioned as what's it's offensive to be inattentive while actually cultivating material desires or maintaining material desires. So while we're performing bhakti, we should be praying to Krishna to help us get rid of impediments in Krishna consciousness, which are the material desires. We shouldn't hate the material desires, but we should understand that they're impediments. Impediments means just like yesterday we were driving from the airport and the traffic was an impediment. But you shouldn't hate the people in the car. Yeah, I've seen people. I have some disciples like that who just like, if someone's driving on the car, this innocent person trying to get to their destination, they'll think all sorts of bad things and say, you know, all sorts of bad things. Even I was driving with someone one time and someone got in our way and the devotee said, Maharaj, give me permission to get out of the car and beat this person up. So that should not be our mood in devotional service. Either should it be our mood when driving a car. So, in other words, we don't hate material desires. We just see that they're interfering with our ability to contact or connect with Krishna. And we try to... How do we give up material desires? We desire spiritual things. But even if you desire material things, at least go to Krishna for those things. In other words, let's say you want a lot of money, you know, for whatever reason. And so at least be honest with Krishna. Say, Krishna, give me a lot of money. You know, you should at least be open and honest. Krishna appreciates honesty. Like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj wanted not only money, he wanted a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. So he went to Krishna. And he chanted with that intention, and he got over it. He gradually got over those desires. Yeah, he was open. So the problem is not, sometimes the devotees are not really open about their situation in devotional service. They'll just say, Krishna, my only desire is to love you. Whereas in fact, they have so many desires, you need a computer to actually, you know, a database, to actually understand all their desires. So instead they say, you know, Krishna, I know that the goal is only to love you and I want to get to that goal eventually. However, here's my list. You know, I just want to, you know, I think honesty is actually better than just like making a show. Right? I mean, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem, I think, in any religion.
And that's why devotees can't chant with their hearts, because they're basically, they're not approaching Krishna with their hearts, because in their hearts there's something else there. So it's said in the Bhagavatam, Akama Sarvakama Moksha Kama Dharadi, Tu Vraina Bhakti Yogeni Yajeta Purusham Param. Whatever one desires, one should approach Krishna. Either full of material desires, free of material desires, or desires of liberation. Just like when I joined the movement, I was desiring liberation. I wanted to get out. You know, I was praying to Krishna. Every night when I took rest, I prayed, Krishna, please kill me tonight so I can go back to Godhead. Mm. And Krishna, of course, he didn't act on that particular prayer. But it was a desire. You know, I wanted to get out of the material world. It was just so miserable for me. And, of course, material world always is miserable, but when the desire to please Krishna becomes so prominent in the heart, one doesn't experience the miseries in the material world. One wants to serve Krishna in any condition. But that comes later on. So one should actually understand one's position and approach Krishna in that way. You know, Krishna, this is what's in my heart. Be honest about it. You know, I do want these things. And, you know, then I know you'll purify me because I'm approaching you. You know, you can keep both desires in the heart. The desire to become completely pure. I know that's the goal. And I really want to achieve it. I want to be like Prabhupada. I want to be like that. However, right now, this is where I'm at. It's really important to be.
Krishna
appreciates that honesty. Otherwise, it's just a show bottle. All I want is your causeless devotional service life. I have no other desire in my heart. One is really not in touch with himself when they're saying those things. I mean, of course, we should repeat Lord Chaitanya's prayers like that. But we should also be honest ourselves. Okay, and it's all the final offense is to be inattentive while chanting the positive that is to be attentive. And the way we're attentive is another interesting thing, very much related to what I just said, was that we have to chant with our hearts. In other words, whatever really we want from Krishna consciousness, that's what's in our hearts. If we want liberation, I mean, I chanted great japa when I was wanting to go back to God and get out of the material world, because that was my impetus. See, people don't understand what's happening in their hearts, so they're just chanting with their brains, and therefore their mind is wandering when they're chanting their japa. But if you're chanting with your heart, you know, like Lord Chaitanya in the Shikshashtika gives different degrees or methods of chanting with the heart. Like in the I Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram prayer, that's a desire for liberation. Or, you know, Krishna consciousness, but Krishna conscious liberation. He says, O son of Nanda Maharaj, I'm your eternal servant, but somehow or other I've fallen into this horrible ocean of birth and death. So there's some ghastliness there. Horrible ocean of birth and death. Vishame Bhavam Buddha. Please fix me up as one of the animals at your lotus feet. So that's, you're getting me out of here. Horrible, because he's mentioning horrible ocean of birth and death. It's also devotional service, but both things are there. And then after that, one is asking for spiritual happiness. Isn't it? Nayanam galu rasharu daraya varanam gadgada rudaya gira pulaka nichitam apukvada tava nama grahe bhavishyati. When is that? When will that day be mine? When I'll fear Nayanam Galu, tears coming from my eyes like tears, like ecstasy, you know, pouring from my eyes like ecstasy, hair standing on my body. When will that, Bhavishyati, when will it be? So one is asking for ecstasy or happiness. So first one is asking for liberation, then one is asking for spiritual happiness, bhava. And then after that you have, what is it, yugayitam nimishena chakshusha pravashayitam. Then I'm just feeling, then it becomes more intense. One feels that the world has no meaning without Krishna. So pure love is starting to develop at that point. And then the final prayer is, what is it? Was that Nayam Galut? No. I forget the Sanskrit. Anyway, Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace. Krishna, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me, but you're completely free to do anything and everything. And you remain my Lord in an unconditional way. So these are all different methods of approaching the Lord according to one's platform of devotional service. So it's like a hierarchy in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, you can even begin with the first Ikshashtaka. So, anyway, so this is important. So this way we'll be attentive while chanting if we understand what's in our own hearts while we're chanting, what we really want from Krishna or with Krishna. Okay? And then, so the 10 offenses are always mentioned, and then after that, I always mention to regularly study Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashtaka, which is really important, because this teaches us the right mood to have while chanting. It's actually getting quite hot here. This is like your old sauna you used to have in your house. All right, so I'm going to try to get a little bit out of it. Yeah, but then I'll be out of the camera. That's right. It might fall over for this class. I'm fine now. Okay, so that's initiation. And then at the time of initiation, you're vowing to follow certain practices and principles, chant 16 rounds every day, which you do, and also follow the four regular principles, no illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eating, and no meat, fish, or eggs, and no intoxication. Intoxication like cigarettes, alcohol. What else? You can get intoxicated in the holy names. Intoxicated in the holy names, intoxicated in the philosophy or the pastimes of Krishna. But no mundane intoxication. When I'm in Fiji, we talk about this kava that everyone takes. And kava is like kava, you ever heard of it?
Kava is an intoxicant.
Yeah, it's intoxicant. So everyone in the country probably takes it and they're intoxicated in 24. What?
Chocolate?
That's a little bit controversial. We'll talk about that one later. When it was presented to Prabhupada asked, where does chocolate come from? And they said, the cocoa bean. And Prabhupada thought that was where cocaine came from. Mm. You know, so it's difficult to understand. I mean, they offered chocolate to the deities in India. Some devotees take chocolate. And some people may take it for their hearts, because a little bit is good for the hearts. So that's a controversial one. I'm not going to get into that, whether chocolate is an intoxicant. We'll have to do some further study on that, isn't it? Have Radharaja do a report. Whether it's an intoxicant. But at least the grosser intoxicants we're talking about. Actually, practically anything you take too much can become an intoxication.
I think television is one of the biggest intoxicants.
Television and even sugar. I mean, if one were to take a lot of sugar,
it's proven. It's a proven.
One can get addicted, and it can become more intoxicating than certainly more than chocolate. If one takes like a whole amount, I've seen devotees do become intoxicated. Mm. The whole idea of not taking intoxication is not to put yourself or do anything that puts you in an illusion within an illusion. We're already in an illusion. So if you do something that alters the bodily chemistry that puts you into a further illusion, then it pulls you further away from Krishna and puts you in the mode of ignorance.
Like video games.
Yeah. Like video games. I mean, I'm not saying you're breaking the principles if you play Pac-Man or something like that. You know, I'm not really going to go that far. But if one becomes completely immersed, Generally, it's talking about chemical intoxication. I mean, we can. There's other things that intoxicate people. I mean, people fall in love and they get intoxicated too. So we can't say that that's against the principles. Or people may go on a roller coaster or amusement ride and get intoxicated. I have to be careful. It's chemical intoxication. Let's just talk about chemical intoxication, because otherwise you can get into so many other things that are intoxicating. Like yesterday, you know, Rod Roger was driving fast in the car, and that was intoxicating for me.
Or it could be like, for me, my case, like compulsiveness.
Yeah, so I think we just talk about chemical intoxication that's prohibited. Because otherwise, I mean, I can go around finding fault with just about everybody, with all they do, you know. You know, someone gets too much into computers, gets on Facebook, and they get intoxicated with Facebook. So let's just stick with the chemical stuff, because that's what Prabhupada talked about. Okay, and so that's basically it as far as the philosophy of initiation. You're getting initiated within ISKCON. And people ask, why ISKCON? You know, why join an organization? Well, the reason we have ISKCON and the reason we're interested in working within ISKCON is because it's Prabhupada's vehicle for helping the whole world, or helping a large amount of people become Krishna conscious. Without an institution, even though institutions traditionally have been counterproductive in religious life, but without an institution, you can't do anything on a wide scale. So it's just like, what do they say in English? Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Mm. So if you just by yourself say no institution, let everybody be spontaneous, then you really can't influence a large amount of people. I mean, maybe a handful of people, they'll like you. But then when you die, if you don't leave an institution, they go away or the whole thing falls apart. So to have longevity, that means to have something continue for a long time, to have something really influence people on a wide scale, you need an institution. So you have to be very careful, of course, not to become institutionalized. Institutionalized means that one becomes so dependent on an institution that they lose their individual sense and initiative. Initiative means that sense of judgment and enthusiasm and discrimination, individual discrimination. So we want to avoid the downfalls or the pitfalls, sorry, of institutional life, but also we have to accept an institution in order to carry out Prabhupada's mission. So we have these, you know, diametrically opposed, these problems here on opposite sides of the spectrum. So therefore, by taking initiation, we're actually, this is my understanding, we're promising to serve Prabhupada's mission, which is represented by the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And even though there may be problems in ISKCON, as there are in any religious organization, instead of leaving the organization, we try to help rectify those particular issues or problems. You know, many people can point out problems, and many people can renounce or reject things, but it takes a great heroic person to be able to rectify or resolve those particular issues. And that's what Prabhupada would want us to do. Okay, that's the end of the lecture. It's a long lecture. Too long, 43 minutes. So now you can... first, you should offer obeisances to the deities, to Srila Prabhupada, and then myself, and then we'll do the name-giving and taking of the beads. A lot of people watching. Yeah, next time we have to get some sort of shave for this thing.
Yeah,
they're getting... This is like... It's like I get a free sauna. Okay. All right, so what are the four regulator principles?
No intoxication, no meat eating, no illicit sex, and no gambling.
Okay. And how many rounds do you chant every day?
16
rounds. And 16 minimum every day. And it's nice to chant more in Ekadashi. Sometimes, like some Ekadashis, at least when I get a chance, I chant 64 rounds. And it's a very wonderful experience. Because then you realize that the 16 rounds is just the beginning. When one day you chant 64 rounds, then 16 rounds, you think, oh, it's just a warm-up. And some devotees, like Haridas Thakur, he would chant 3 lakhs of names a day. Now, a lakh means 100,000. So a lakh of names, because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra has 16 names, means basically 64 rounds. That's a lakh of names. So if you chant 3 lakhs of names, how many is that?
192.
192. And so how many hours a day would that take?
24.
Almost 24, depending on the speed of chanting. So if you would chant like 3 lakhs a day, that's a lot. I would say that I think the most I've ever chanted is like 68 or something like that in one day. And that's wonderful. You basically enter into the spiritual world when you take that time out to chant 64 nice rounds. So Ekadasi is an ideal time for increasing the number of rounds. Okay, so you can get the beads now with your right hand and come here. So your name now is Nitya Tripta Devi Dasi. Tripta means satisfaction, and Nitya means eternal, to be eternally satisfied. Nitya Tripta. How's that sound?
Wonderful.
There was a Prabhupada disciple I knew by that name.
Yeah.
She's a photographer. Where he said, Nitya Tripta Devi Dasi Ki Jai.
So,
that's your spiritual name. This is Nityatripta. And I can spell it for you. Okay? Any questions?
Wonderful.